Good morning. My name is Felita, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Update Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. John Boozer, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, operator, and thank you for everybody who's dialed in this morning. So Paul Daggett and I are here today representing Neuberger Berman to go through this investor update. Also on the line with us today are the board chairman, Talmai Morgan, and William Maltby, a member of the board. And they will be available as part of the Q&A period at the end of the presentation that Paul and I will walk through. So to begin the presentation on page two, the quick overview of NB Private Equity Partners, NBPE. Our goal is to provide investors the opportunity for capital appreciation both through share price growth and through the current income from our regularly paid dividend. We do this by investing into private equity-backed companies across the capital structure where we find the best relative value opportunities. The manager, of which Paul and I are part at Neuberger Berman, we source and the deals through the Neuberger Berman platform and use the diligence capabilities of Neuberger Berman as we make the investment decisions. Our platform at Neuberger Berman is currently over $70 billion private equity platform. And finally, NBPE is set up with great fee efficiency offering for our investors with lower all-in costs to investors than other listed PE vehicles. If you flip on to page three, you'll see a little bit about the platform I just mentioned. At the top of that circle, the direct equity co-investments and direct credit are the primary sources of the transactions that go into NBPE as investments. You also see a large funds portfolio. Neuberger Berman, or NBPE, used to have a significant fund portfolio, but we've eroded that over time through natural attrition as companies were sold, as well as strategic sales of the fund positions. But the fund positions held by Neuberger Berman remain very important as we have relationships across the industry to generate the direct equity co-investment and direct credit deal flow. Some of the highlights of Neuberger Berman on the right side of that page, 30 years as a private equity investor, over 530 active private equity fund relationships, a very deep team of 160 private equity professionals, and then a global presence for our private equity platform with four offices in the U.S., three offices in Europe, as well as Hong Kong and Bogota. If you move on to page four, you'll see some of the NBPE key performance highlights for the trailing 12 months. Upper left, the performance, 6.6%, and a 17.4% share price return in sterling. The performance, as you recall, in the fourth quarter, there was non-impressive performance. Largely with the downturn in the stock market, there's been some recovery of that shows through our performance going into the first quarter of this year, although that recovery is not still complete. On the upper right, our capital position. So at this point, Neuberger or NBPE has well over $1 billion of private equity fair value, and we have 124% adjusted commitment coverage ratio, meaning we're very well prepared to satisfy every capital obligation that we have. Cash flows continue to be strong at NBPE. So you see during the trailing 12 months, $203.3 million was received back from our investments. So that's approximately 20% of all our investments have come back during the trailing 12 months. We've invested slightly more than that into new investments over that same 12-month period. And then on the right, you'll see the dividend, 3.9% annualized dividend yield on share price, 3.2% annualized dividend yield on the NAV of NBPE. If you flip on to page five, we have some investment highlights. You see at the top, we've highlighted that the NAV per share at the end of the quarter was $17.71. And that's after paying the 28-cent dividend in the first quarter. Just historically, we started paying dividends in 2013. And we've now distributed to shareholders $3.15 per share as total dividends. We've also distributed to shareholders in buybacks about 58 cents per share over the life of the company. Going down through a few of these statistics, again, you'll see the heavy predominance of equity investments, direct equity investments in companies in our asset mix. So $860 million of our little over $1 billion of assets are in equity investments. Income investments are $130 million, and the fund investments are now down to $45.7 million, or about 4% of our portfolio. The private equity investment level, what that represents, is the $1.036 billion of total private equity value compared to the $862 million of net asset value of the company as a whole, and that reflects a bit of leverage on the portfolio that comes from the three sources you see below: the credit facility borrowings and our two tranches of ZDPs, which are due in 2024 and 2022. So page six goes through the diversification of our portfolio. And if you look at the top two pie charts first together, what you see is a portfolio that's well-diversified but weighted towards North American investments, and particularly weighted towards North American investments in the small and mid-cap space. We also have representation in Europe and Asia and the rest of the world, as well as about a one-fourth representation to the large-cap space as well. Going to the lower left, the industry, as we invest in multiple different direct investment opportunities, we are careful to make sure we're weighting different industries, and you can see a pie chart that's well diversified by industry as well on the lower left. I think a very important analysis for the health of our portfolio is illustrated at the lower right, the vintage year analysis. This is the years that the companies that are the underlying portfolio companies held by NBPE were originally acquired by NBPE. So what you see if you add together 2017, 18, and 19 is that 58% of our assets are less than 2 years old at this point. And if you add two more years or three more years onto that, 90% of our assets are less than 5 years old. When you think about the 4% of additional assets that are wind-off fund portfolio, you see that only 6% of our direct investing efforts approximately have resulted in companies that are still with us more than 5 years into their life. And as we see hundreds and hundreds of business plans for private equity companies each year, there's very consistently a 4 to 5 to 6 year holding period intended for those companies, and to have a portfolio that turns over at the rate that ours has is indicative of a very healthy private equity portfolio where the companies are meeting their goals and being disposed of in the marketplace. So if you move on to page seven, this is the NAV per share development slide from end of March of last year to end of March of this year. You see the increases have been from investment appreciation and then 33 cents per share of yield, income, and dividend. The cost going to the right from there, the financing costs, the management fees, and then not a cost but an expenditure of capital, the dividends of 56 cents that have been paid to shareholders over the last 12 months. And then a slight amount of accretion from buybacks to get us to our ending NAV at the end of March of $17.71 a share. Our performance is overviewed by investment type on the next page. What you'll see is 83% of our fair value today is in direct equity investments, which have historically been our strongest performer, whether it's 1, 3, 5, or 10 years. Our income investments make up 13% of our portfolio. They've been consistent performers, although they're targeted at a lower level of return over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. And then the fund portfolio, as I said, is in wind-down mode as we've let some funds run off and others where we thought it best strategically sold those in the marketplace. Page 9 is our portfolio investment activity and liquidity. And this, again, kind of reiterates the point I made previously about the health of our portfolio with turnover as companies are acquired and sold consistent with private equity strategy. You can see since the beginning of 2016, if you read the little bullet line at the top, there have been $845 million of realizations received since the beginning of 2016, very close to the total value of our entire portfolio, and $720 million of new investments. So between those two statistics and looking at the chart below, you see we have a very active amount of realizations and a very active amount of new investments made to replace the investments that we've sold. You also can see from the bar charts below, there's a mixture of where these cash flows come in and go out, with the equity being the largest cash flows out, and the income investments being realized slightly larger in 2016 than or substantially larger than the equity, but at this point more balanced like our portfolio. So the next two slides deal with where we are in the marketplace today, and I've probably seen this slide from us before multiple times, but the multiples are historically very high, both in the private markets and the public markets, and particularly the private markets, the public markets in the U.S. actually outline the other three multiples. The U.S. private markets have been at 10 or higher since 2015, so we've been in a long period of elevated market prices, both for our entries and exits that we've been making. Although you'll see relative to the public markets, the U.S. markets have not, private markets have not spiked nearly as much. The European public versus private valuations, obviously the public are lower. One difference between the marketplaces in the U.S., the public in the U.S., and the public in Europe, there's a higher predominance of technology companies that weight the market in the U.S. compared to Europe, and those draw up the multiple in the U.S., I think, relative to Europe, that make these charts look the way they do. But in this high multiple environment, whether it's public or private, our strategy that we undertake is we pick the specific companies that go into the NBPE portfolio is laid out on page 11. We look for companies that we think on a bottoms-up basis have a great chance of performing well, even if we own them through a downturn in the market cycle. And so the company characteristics are we like companies with strong free cash flow. We like a capital structure that is sustainable in a downturn. We try to find companies that are less cyclical than perhaps others, although we don't try to pretend most of our companies aren't, and all companies aren't cyclical to some extent. And we look for industries that we think have strong secular trends that will continue through a cycle and reemerge stronger after a cycle. Our strategy is we look forward to what are the GPs doing with these companies, really focused on execution risk over market risk, where we identify opportunities to create value through operational improvements and growth. Examples of that, as you see, are margin expansion and geographic expansion as well. So that's the current environment, and I'm going to turn it over to Paul Daggett, who's going to go more directly, specifically, into our NBPE portfolio.
Great. So, well, thank you, John. And on that point, I will get into more detail, first of all, on the equity portfolio on slide 12. And this is a summary of the direct equity portfolio. You can see we have 103 direct equity positions. That's with 55 different general partners in the portfolio. One of the things we've talked about a lot is that we have tried to build a slightly more concentrated portfolio over time. And if you look on the right, the top 10 investments account for 30% of the direct equity fair value now. I would also point out that there are 40 companies in the portfolio with less than $5 million of fair value. 20 companies have less than $2 million. So there are some smaller positions, but you can look at the larger positions and really see, I think, from those larger positions what the direction of the portfolio might be, and I'll try to give you more guidance on that later in the presentation. Just on a high level, though, we've updated our growth statistics for the company as of the end of December, so you'll see those on the left of the page. Of the 76 companies we're able to include in this data set, the average is 6.4% LTM revenue growth, a 14% EBITDA growth, so a very healthy portfolio overall, and you can see the valuation and leverage statistics. Valuation levels obviously have gone up over time. Ours are, I think, generally in line with the market, given the weightings that we have in our portfolio to certain sectors which tend to trade at higher multiples, like technology and healthcare. And the leverage level, I think, is very reasonable and generally in line or actually slightly lower than the market for those particular sectors again. On slide 13 gives a summary of our exits and our valuation uplift on exits. Again, you'll see for 2018, we had five full exits. They generated a 1.9 times gross multiple, a 25% IRR. So far in 2019, we're not showing any exits. We actually have two that we will give details on in the April monthly, both of which are very successful exits. So that chart will be populated next time we show it for 2019. On the right, the valuation uplift on exit, again, something we show in all of our presentations, and you can see three quarters prior to exits announced over the last 3 years, the average discount to where that exit actually occurred was 30%. So again, it just shows you the valuations have been reasonably conservative over that three-year period for those exits. A little more information on 14 on the realizations. Again, on the top of the page are the realizations shown in the prior chart, plus one other, which is Standard Aero. That is an exit that happened in April. It was a very successful investment that we made in 2015 that was recently sold to a financial sponsor. But again, if you look across all of the exits and IPOs on this page, again, I think you'll see good diversity in a number of ways. First of all, vintage year. These are exits from companies in 2013 and 14 in particular. Also, though, from 15, 16, and 2010. And so to go back to John's point on the vintage year pie chart, you can see the exits are really coming from companies which we've held for 4 or 5 years on average. One is a little older. Four of them are a little bit younger. But again, it does show you that that window for exits in general in private equity and within our portfolio has been 4 or 5 years. You'll also see that the types of exits are well diversified. So there's 5 sales to private equity sponsors, 3 sales to strategics, 3 sales of public stock that we had the public stock because of a previous IPO, and then 4 new IPOs during the year. So again, I think very good diversity, not dependent on IPO markets or private equity sponsors for all of our exits. Moving on to new investments on slides 15 and 16, a lot of these we've covered in prior presentations because this is a cumulative slide that we show each quarter for the year. So again, I won't cover all of the companies, but the theme is very much in line with what John talked about, that we're looking for companies which are either somewhat defensive in their nature and we think will be relatively non-cyclical, or where we think there are secular growth drivers which should allow a company to grow stronger than the economy, even if there is a downturn, based on our due diligence. There are 2 new companies which we have made in 2019. That is Agility on slide 15 and Hub on slide 16. But again, I think you'll see a very good diversity of types of investments. There's 23 different general partners in these 26 investments. There are 7 midlife investments. We talk about midlife investments a lot. These are situations where we invest after the lead general partner has already invested and held the company for some period of time. Usually, we're coming into those investments to provide additional equity capital for add-on acquisitions, and there were 7 of those situations out of these 26 investments over that time period. So actually, a particularly high level of midlife transactions. That should, again, allow us, according to our underwriting, to have shorter hold periods and, again, to maintain that pie chart where, you know, our goal is to maintain it where we don't have very old investments for the most part, that we can maintain that velocity of capital. So moving on to slide 17. The next 2 slides, what I wanted to do was to give a little bit more of an insight into what's in the portfolio today. I think we talk a lot about new investments and about exits that we've had. We probably spent less time on the companies in the middle, and that's my intention here. On slide 17, what we're showing is the equity investments by vintage year. So the bars show you the net asset value of direct equity investments by vintage year. The diamonds align with the axis on the right and show you where we're carrying those investments as a multiple of invested capital on average for those vintage years. And what you can see, first of all, obviously there isn't very much value ascribed to older investments. And for example, 2006 to 2012 is about 1% of the portfolio today. If you look to the 16, 17, 18 vintages, then there's 20% almost in 2016, 33% in 17, 22% in 18. So those clearly are the key years when you're analyzing NBPE to make sure that those investments are performing well. I'll get to that on the next page. What you will see, though, is in those vintage years, in 17 and 18, again, they have been marked up slightly because they are generally performing well, but they are marked well below what we ultimately target and well below what our overall track record is for equity co-investments in NBPE. And the reason we show this is, I think, as you look at our performance of our equity portfolio and our total portfolio in 2018, the performance was good. It is not as good as our overall track record. And I think part of the reason for that is that you have these investments in these vintage years, which are still maturing. And I think ultimately some of that value has yet to be reflected in valuations. So again, I feel good about what's in those vintage years. And I think that is part of the explanation for 2018 being a good year. But as I say, not quite where we ultimately want to be for our equity investments on a year-by-year basis. On slide 18, this gets into a little bit more detail in those vintage years, just telling you the company names and the sizes of those investments. So this is the largest five investments in the remaining in the equity portfolio by vintage year. Across these 25 investments, you're looking at about 50% of the direct equity fair value, so $437 million of fair value across these. The companies in italics are public, so these are situations where they have been taken public by the underlying sponsor. We don't control that stock, but typically it is the sponsor's goal to sell that stock down over time in a pretty measured way. Ultimately, obviously, they're looking for cash, though, too. To that point, there are a couple of these positions that you'll see in the April monthly where there have been very significant sales of the public stock. Both of those are in the 2014 vintage year, so that's a good thing. 2014 will get significantly smaller. In 2015, Standard Aero, we already mentioned. We hold that both in the equity and income portfolio. So that will be a very meaningful return of capital and a significant gain, which will return cash back to NBPE. So again, because it's such a large position, that will obviously take out a lot of the value from that 2015 portfolio, in fact, almost half of it. And then 16, 17, and 18, I think there's a lot of good things going on. We've seen companies make transformative acquisitions in the case, for example, of Beyond Trust, for example, in GFL and MHS. So some very proactive decisions by sponsors to make acquisitions, to diversify end markets, to make companies larger, and overall to improve their prospects. There are companies here which, you know, I think are hopefully exploring sales or have filed for IPO. So again, some good direction that we're seeing in this relatively young portfolio. And again, as you look at 16, 17, and 18, the growth rates of these companies in revenue and EBITDA terms is very good. So again, I think as you look at what's in the portfolio, although we do have over 100 positions in equity, looking just at these 25, as I mentioned, that's about 50%. And we think that the general direction in these companies is very positive. On 19 is the public stock exposure. And again, these are not positions that we necessarily voluntarily hold. They are controlled by the underlying GP and will be sold when that GP makes that decision. That was a drag on our performance, as you can imagine, in the fourth quarter of 2018 because the publics were significantly down. I will also mention that two of those have not recovered fully. As John mentioned, Extraction, the biggest what was the largest equity holding through public stock that we had. If you look back a year ago, that has traded down quite significantly and stayed down because of company-specific factors, as opposed to any kind of market decision. That would be, I would say, the one company in the equity portfolio I would point to that has, of any scale, that has disappointed over the last year. And again, of course, that does factor in to the fact that our equity returns were 12% IRR in 2018, and not, if you look at our 3 year, it's 18%, our 5 year is 18%. So, you know, again, that is one of the causes of that. But overall, these public positions we always look to really as a source of future liquidity. We don't know when, but obviously it's one step closer to liquidity once they've had that IPO, particularly once you've gone past lockup periods that where the sponsors can begin to sell those down. Moving on to the income portfolio on slide 20. Again, the income portfolio has reduced in size. It's 13% now. Before we even get to the dividend comments, I will mention that we have never explicitly tied the income portfolio to the level of the dividend. It has always been something that we put in place because we thought it was an attractive investment class to include in the MBP portfolio. Over the last couple of years, we've seen very active realizations from that portfolio. We've reinvested at a much more measured pace, and that portfolio has reduced in size. As I mentioned, you shouldn't look at that and think that means anything in terms of the dividend. But what's remaining in the portfolio, you can see, has a very strong yield to maturity, is, again, made up of a group of companies which have good equity cushions, strong EBITDA margins, et cetera. So, again, what's in the portfolio, I think, is doing well. And as I mentioned, Standard Aero, you'll see on the right, in a pick position, which has now been realized. So, again, there is significant liquidity continuing within this portfolio as well. So moving on now to historic performance on slide 21. Some of this I've already covered. The net asset value growth was 6.6% in dollar terms. Obviously, because of the sterling dollar exchange rate changes over the year, which benefited us, the sterling number is much higher. Given that we are mostly dollar assets, obviously the US dollar number is the most appropriate. As I mentioned, it's good. It's not as good as we'd like to see. That is because we have a young portfolio, which we believe is maturing, can drive future value. Two specific positions, Extraction I mentioned. We also had an income position that we've covered in previous calls that has now been written down to a relatively de minimis value, which occurred largely in 2018. So two specific positions. Generally, the portfolio, though, I think is doing very well. And then finally, of course, as John mentioned, the fund portfolio has continued to reduce. We also made a large secondary transaction at the end of 2018. So the portfolio has reduced to 4% of fair value from 11% 1 year ago. Of course, making a secondary sale at a discount it does have a small impact on the performance as well. So that's the final factor. I'm telling you all of this because ultimately we feel the portfolio is very well positioned, that there are a lot of good things going on in the portfolio. The one-year return was reasonable. 3 year, 5 year, 10 year have been very good, and we hope to be able to get back to those numbers in 2019 and beyond. Dividends and capital position are described on 22. The dividend is just being paid. It was in February. The next dividend would be due in August. We paid 28 cents a share. As you can see, that is over 8 times covered from total distributions to MBP during 2018. So we feel it is a very well-covered dividend, partially covered by the income from the income portfolio, but much better covered by the overall realizations that we saw from the portfolio. The balance sheet remains strong. You can see we have 124% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. The credit facility has almost $100 million available on it. So again, we are very well covered. We are always very focused on the balance sheet and making sure it remains strong, and again, that dividend is sustainable over time. On slide 23 is the NAV and the share price development. Again, you can see that the share price in dollars has not moved up as much as we would like over the year, obviously in sterling, because of the exchange rate differential during the year has traded up quite a bit. Again, NAV has performed reasonably well, ticking up slightly, but this all leads to slide 24, which is the resulting discount over time. This actually looks back a little bit further to March of 2016. You can see our discount has varied over that time, anywhere from the low teens to the high 20s, or actually even slightly beyond that. Over that time period, today we're at about a 19% discount. This is our largest focus within the MBPE team for the board. We've done a lot of things over this time period that are called out in boxes, both structurally as well as around corporate governance. And you know, I think it's very much a focus of ours to make sure we're seen as a company which is applying high standards of corporate governance, that is doing everything we can to narrow that discount. Of course, the largest thing we can do is to produce good performance over time, and us as a manager are highly focused on doing that, and we believe we can continue to do that, and the portfolio is very well positioned. A couple of things we've done more recently in the two boxes on the right. First of all, we have refreshed the board. William Maltby, who is on the call for the Q&A session, and Wilken von Hoddenberg both joined the board at the beginning of this year. John stepped down from the board, so at this point we have six directors. Talmai will be stepping down come the AGM at the end of the year. But again, we think that refreshing the board, making sure we have full independence on the board, is an important thing and something we're focused on and have now achieved. The second thing is around share buybacks. Again, it's been a subject of much discussion with investors and at the board level. We have been making share buybacks in 2019, but the program began in January. We've made buybacks as recently as last week. At this point, we bought back just over 1.5 million shares. At a weighted average discount of about 20%. That produces a NAV accretion per share of 11 cents. So again, we are always willing to return capital to make sure we are doing the right thing. We're highly focused on that discount, and we're really doing all we can. We're certainly not satisfied with the discount where it is today. And finally, just on slide 25, which really is a summary, I've covered most of this. Obviously, our goal is to produce capital appreciation over time, as well as a yield from the dividend, which is just under 4% on the share price at the moment. Our goal is to produce good NAV development, strong portfolio performance. We believe we've done that over the medium and long term, and you know, we think we're well positioned to do that in the future. And then really just maybe the last point. Again, John touched on it, but we do believe our fee structure is particularly attractive. 95% of our direct portfolio has no fee, no carry due to underlying sponsors. So we think that our method of investment is very attractive in terms of the fee level, both on an absolute basis and also relative to other listed private equity funds. And with that, I'll just hand over to Talmai to make any concluding comments he has, and following that, we'll be happy to take any questions that anybody on the call has.
Thank you very much, Paul, and welcome to everyone. I hope you found that presentation helpful. Plenty of time for questions. Just a few things I'd like to mention. Firstly, very much of a public welcome to our two new directors, William Maltby and Wilkin von Hoddenberg. Their appointment was the finalization of a very exhaustive and very objective process during which we very much benefited from the services of Cornforth Consulting in London. We believe that we've made two very good appointments, and as I said, I'd like to publicly welcome them. I think that their appointment will be of great benefit to the company over the years ahead. I will indeed, at the company's annual general meeting in September, be retiring. That, I think, is appropriate because of the length of time that I have been chairman, and for good corporate governance, that is important. I think I will remain as a shareholder of this company. I've actually got over £150,000 of my own money in this company because I think it's a damn good company. And I feel very confident that it's going to be in very safe hands going forward. You will have noticed we made a big share buyback last week. That was a significant number of shares, over 1.25 million shares, specifically 1,258,000 shares. It was a very good opportunity that arose. We thought it was the right thing to do commercially, the appropriate use of the company's capital. As the opportunity arose, we took that opportunity, which will be significantly accretive for the benefit of remaining shareholders. When opportunities arise, we'll do that which is necessary in our evaluation for the best interests of the company and the shareholders as a whole. So that was a big buyback last week. We certainly won't do that every week, but that shows the approach that this board is happy to take. As Paul said, we're not satisfied with the present discount to net asset value. We've never been satisfied with any significant discount. We're not an outlier. Nevertheless, we're not satisfied. We always look for opportunities to narrow that discount. We will continue to do that. The company is in relatively fine fettle, and I will now, without taking up any more time, invite questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And there is a question from Charles Murphy.
Gentlemen, good morning in America. Just a couple of questions around Q1 2019's performance. I know it's not on this chart because you've gone back rolling 12 months. It seems to be quite modest. I got it sort of about less than 1%, but I was expecting quite a strong write back in the listed part of the portfolio, which was cited as a reason for the poor performance in Q4. I was wondering if you can talk me through that, whether there were any particular items that happened during Q1 that we should be aware of. And then I've got a couple more questions after that.
Yeah, so Charles, well, thanks for the question. And you're correct around obviously public performance in Q4 and the expectation that much of that would come back in Q1. I think a large proportion of it did. As I mentioned, there were two companies which traded down during the year and during Q4 as well, which have not come back more, you know, company specific than stock market related. More to the point though, I think if you look at the valuations in the March monthly, essentially the private valuations are December 31st, and so really what you're looking at is a roll forward of publics. Obviously there is a level of income from the income portfolio, but everything else is valued as of December, and that's really the shortcoming of the March monthly. It happens to fall at a point where very little new private information comes through, because people have just finished the year-end process, which takes longer than it takes every other quarter because they are audited. So it means the March monthly tends to have less updated value. So I would say, first of all, it's the best information we can supply to the market, but it's not as useful as other monthlies might be, I would say. So, you know, take what you just said with a pinch of salt, but I think that's true. It's not up as much as we might like, and especially given, I would say, the optimism that we have around that private portfolio that I covered, and hopefully we'll see that coming through in April, May, June. I think that's the main thing. I don't think there's really anything else to note. There's not any other significant events or anything that is reflected in that valuation. It really is just a combination of those two things.
Okay, thank you, Paul. My next question is on the income portfolio. I've gone to the slide in the back of the book. Am I right in saying the numbers here, these are written down values in here? And if so, can you tell me, you've got the credit opportunities investment, which you think is going to, well, it's got an estimated yield to maturity of 17%. It's a decent chunk of the exposure. How comfortable are you? Because that sort of essentially implies quite a degree of distress.
Yeah, and of course, you're right. Anytime you see statistics looking like this, then it means that the positions were acquired at a discount, which obviously has the implication you just said. The strategy for those types of investments is to look for dislocations, whether caused by issues around a seller, or whether it's issues around a particular company trading at a discount, where we believe we have particular insights that give us a different opinion. And really that is the strategy of that credit opportunities portfolio. And so, you know, the team that made that is dedicated to those types of investments. They have a long career and track record in those types of investments. And when they make investments there, they believe they have those types of insights, which is why they're able to acquire investments they think at a good price relative to what they're ultimately worth. And that's reflected in those numbers. And that really, I think, is why they look the way they do, that you're exactly right. We're buying companies where we're buying them at a discount to face value, where our team believes they're worth more than that. And they have a high degree of confidence when they make those investments that that's the case.
Okay, that's great. And just confirming, because I'm thinking about how to think about 2019, the corporate debt at fair value statistics, cash yield 5.2, yield to maturity 13.1. Is there anything obviously distressed about any of the credits left in this portfolio? Do you think these are reasonably deliverable numbers? You've got Digital River, I can see, is probably the one you've written down, judging by the yield to maturity. But if you look at the basket of those coupons, you feel they're fairly deliverable within the risk profile of the income portfolio.
Yes, we do. No, it's a very fair question. Obviously, Digital River is a very low Fair Valley at this point, but
yeah.
But you're correct. You know, the biggest parts of the fair value are in PIC notes, which are at the top of the page, one of which has been realized in April. You know, I think overall we do feel very good about those statistics, but there are no material positions or significant positions where, you know, we have huge concerns. So ultimately, we did have one position, obviously, which is now written down to what we think is recovery value. But otherwise, everything on this page is, I think, we're expecting it to perform reasonably well. So, yes, I think that, that the one you pointed out, Digital River, is the only one that stands out to me on this page.
Okay. The final question, just on the fund portfolio, thank you for putting in the pricing in the annual report and things like that. That was really useful. Is there a strategy of just running out the balance until it just self-liquidates, or would you consider a secondary sale on the fund portfolio?
So we selected the investments based on what we thought were the best positions to sell in two ways. One, where we have particular insights from the general partners that there's good things going on in the portfolio, and in one of those cases, you know, around our own funds, obviously we have particular insights as well. There are some legacy fund of funds investments within that, where we expect to begin to liquidate the whole portfolio. And then secondly, of course, you know, we have a secondary team, a large secondary team, who knows typically where particular positions trade relative to what they think the value is, and they're able to help us with the insights on that. And then the other part of the thought process is some of the very small positions just don't make sense to sell, because ultimately there are transaction costs and transferral costs. And so the very small positions in general we just chose to keep. And that's what's left. Ultimately, we would look at you know, on a case-by-case basis, more likely look at secondary sales. But I think really we're expecting what we're holding in all but two cases to liquidate to a very significant degree over the next year or two, where we would not need to do another secondary sale. And then we do have two particular positions, I think, which might take longer. In those cases, we felt it was better to let them mature more before attempting to sell them. But those are positions that we might consider selling in a year or two. Just obviously, ultimately, we want to be completely done with having any fund positions, so the message can be very clear. But we did think taking a year or two to get the highest value made most sense in doing that.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Most helpful. Those are my questions.
Great. Thank you.
Next, you have a question from the line of Louis Borgalis.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I would like to give you the bottom line on my view of your discount. I think it's going to be in a range of 10 to 20 instead of 15 to 25 as a result of all the activities you have done. I commend you. I congratulate you to finally step up and buy in some of this stock to the benefit of us long-term shareholders. Well done. I understand there's a variety of corporate governance moves that I guess are important to some, but I think the combination of the dividend and the opportunistic purchase will create a range of, say, 10 to 20 in the discount instead of the 15 to 25 with an occasional excursion to more. For us long-term shareholders who monetize our dividends when opportunity presents itself, it's not as good as it has been, but I think, in the long-term interest of everyone. Well done. I think your information is fabulous, and I am delighted to be here for the next years as I've been for the last 10. Well done.
Well, thank you very much. It's not often that one hears congratulations like that. It is much appreciated. But I can assure you that the board is not content with the discount, and will continue to do that which is possible to narrow it and to do the best for our shareholders as a whole. I know you've been a shareholder for a long time, and it is much appreciated.
And I've also been quite critical over the years, and I really appreciate the moves that all of you have done. Goodbye.
Well, thank you very much, and I've got no doubt that, as with everybody else in this world, we deserve criticism from time to time, but thank you. Are there any other questions?
No, sir, not at this time.
I mean, John or Paul, do you want to say anything further, or merely thank everyone for kindly telephoning in today? We hope it's been helpful. As ever, we try to share as much information as possible. We think we've got a very good company here. It's a good company in which to be invested, as I referred to earlier. We'll continue to do our very best for the company and its shareholders. So if there aren't any other questions, thank you very much to everyone.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.